This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Either one of you jump in. Tell us what it was like to film in Louisiana, because you still had the smell of Katrina while you were filming. What was it like? What was the, you know, the weather?
That's right. When we were there,
I'll follow.
It was right after Katrina. So many of the neighborhoods were still devastated. A lot of the people
Ninth
we worked
Ward
with.
Was off.
That's right. And most of the people we worked with were affected in some way by Katrina. But the gorgeous thing is there's such a resilience and a life force and a culture in New Orleans. The people were incredibly inspiring, don't you think?
Yeah, being in the South is like being in this cauldron of American lyricism and poetry and jazz and expression and art. So it's already there, but then they had this tragedy. And it was amazing to see their character, you know, just them, they muscled up against it and were fighting it out, and living through it, you know. It was gorgeous and painful.
I think both of you had to tell us a lot about your characters without telling us a lot. There's a lot of stillness in the scenes together. Mm. Is that more of a challenge to play that, to expose the character incrementally like that, rather than having one great expository scene?
I find it embarrassing to telegraph. I mean, I find it, you know, oh, here, you're not smart enough to figure it out, so I'm going to show you. You know, it's like showing and telling is really not acting.
You're so good at that, though. I mean, you really taught me that when I would try to fill the spaces with words.
I didn't teach you nothing.
Yes, you did, but you taught me how to be quiet, right? Because I tend to be someone, I feel like if I feel something, I have to express it, but you tend to be able to do it just being quiet and everything comes across.
Well, I spent a lot of time talking beforehand. And then on the day I shut up and let it sort of, you know, sit underneath. But I don't, you know, I think telling people what to think and feel is the opposite of what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to tell you what to think and feel. You're supposed to think and feel what you want to think and feel. So I will too. So if I take that permission for myself, then I may be giving you the permission to do it too without, you know, putting my tongue in my cheek and saying, you know, maybe we're going to be okay. I've been up here before, you know, I'm your movie star. You know, like, it's condescending, I think. I mean, your idea is to find a way to live inside your character. It's not schizophrenic, it's not acting out, it's a character creation, but we live inside ourselves, we all do. So I figure that's a staple of of being human. Mm-hmm.
She's
like going, yeah, right.
But I do think in the case of both characters, though, we jump to a lot of conclusions. There are certain expectations that we have. We see you come out of prison, so we can jump to the worst possible conclusion. We see you working, independent businesswoman, and yet not having the wherewithal to deal with the situations that you have. Mm-hmm. So is there some satisfaction, I guess, in holding back on telling us these things so that we get to know you before we learn the truth, whether it's the, you know, your own history, your character's history, the reason your character was in prison?
There's a difference between telling a story and living a story. You want, I mean, the idea is that if you're really earning your respect, if I'm earning your respect as an audience, I'm living through, my character's living through a situation that you would believe if you ask yourself, do I really believe this? Do I really believe that that behavior is appropriate? The only way for me to do that is to say, do I believe it? So I'm trying to create a character that is living, you know, I ask myself on every page and every word, do I believe, you know, is this true? Is this a true depiction of human nature? You know, or is this just a made-up character to make everything easier for us while we, you know, walk off a cliff? You don't identify with me unless I'm as individual as you are. You don't identify with that character unless he's living through something that you can believe you would if you were him. So, you know, why be showy? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. How hard is that to do when you're on... In this project, I'm sure there was a lot of collaboration and back and forth between everyone. But when you're in some of those big, huge Hollywood kind of movies where, you know, it's more of a spectacle, how hard is it to?
It's horrendously difficult. It's awful. It's hard. It's like, why didn't you give me any rehearsals, especially when the budget went up? I'm going to be that much more scared when I go to work. We had rehearsal.
We did. We had a couple of weeks.
We had time. Mm-hmm. So that's the key.
Well, you know, one of our favorite scenes in that big spectacle, The Incredible Hulk, was just you and Robert Downey Jr. talking at the end. So you got to do that a little.
But we improv that. That entire scene was, there was no lines written down for that scene. We improv the entire scene. And we both know what that, we actually both had more of a script because of that, and a feeling of more invention because of that. So that we could actually go, okay, who do I think my character is? Well, what would you say next? I haven't got a clue. Let's have a shot at it, you know?
As they've gone on to do Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, and ultimately The Avengers, what's your commitment to them? How much are they going to call on you to appear in those films?
If they call me, I'll answer.
Tell them to call me while you're at it.
I will. Me and Maria. I don't come anywhere without Maria.
Two for one.
For the 2-day shot already, have you done any yet for Thor and Captain
no,
and
no,
Iron Man 2?
No. Okay. But I would do it.
But you've been busy in Sherwood Forest.
I've been busy. I've been busy in lots of places. I've been busy. I've been all over the place.
Oh, yeah, Sherwood Forest.
Yeah, Sherwood Forest. Yep.
Is that,
on horseback in armor.
Yeah, well, and also you've got Moby Dick, right? Are you Ahab?
I was Ahab, yeah.
That's going to be something.
I don't know. We'll see.
Do you hesitate before stepping into those shoes? Not to say that, you know, Gregory Peck was the definitive Captain Ahab, but the point is, it's a story that's
so. Remember the line from Leonard Cohen, not that I should compare, but I do compare now that she's gone.
Oh.
As an actor, I don't compare much. I mean, I don't think we, you know,
mm-mm.
Why compare?
What's the point?
Yeah, it's.
I mean, if we're
you're
living
talking
because
about
of for our authenticity, then there's nothing to compare to.
And you're working with great. You're working with the great. You're working with Melville. Every page explodes myths. Every page explodes stereotypes. Every page. That's what's exciting about Moby Dick. It isn't running around chasing a whale that's exciting. It's that everything you think about a person that initially is what is something you don't really think. You find out that it's not true. You find out that Queequeg is sitting waiting for, you know, Ishmael in a Protestant church. But he's a Muslim. You find that Ishmael, when he's, you know, a naive a proselytizer of Christian misunderstandings, he's teaching this very wise person about why Muslims are full of nonsense, okay? Condescending to him. And then Queequeg has this immense sense of humor, saying, well, he and his dad ate 50 white guys before barbecue one night. And it was, you know what I'm saying? Shockingly funny, shockingly filled with character. Shocking. So what's amazing about it, what the fireworks, are the explosions of prejudice, detonating prejudice in front of your eyes, your own, and you're going, oh, that's crazy, man. And I don't know if any of the films have got there yet. I don't know if anybody can touch Melville on screen.
Seems like a story that cries out to be on the big screen, though. What you're talking about sounds more intimate, sounds more stereotypical.
Well, I'm not sure I did we pulled off what I just described. And I'm saying film is, it's very, very tough. One of the few. What is that? Gregory Peck, To Kill a Mockingbird, one of the great reflections of a great book, a great film of a great book.
It's hard to do.
It's hard to do. You cannot make a film of a book. You can use a book as inspiration and character reference, but you can't make a film of a book. They're different. They're different. You know, they're different art forms. They're indigenously different. Otherwise, they'd be the same.
Maria, we know that William loves to do research and really submerge himself in different learning things for roles. Are you the same way? Do you do a lot of research?
Well, the funniest thing is, it was one of my favorite acting experiences working with Bill, and yet we work so differently. I tend to not do any research.
You lie like a rug.
I don't. What research did I do?
You did a lot. You did a lot for History
night.
Of Violence.
I didn't.
You did, though. You gave it all to Vigo. So that's where he said he got it from.
Well, because he does research too.
Well,
I give it to
you,
people, but I don't really do it.
Okay.
So, but I tend to just emotionally just go from one moment to the next. I never believed in motivation. I always just believe, like in life, as you're walking one foot in front of the other, that it seems to emotionally carry you. And maybe that's a naivety on my part,
no,
but that's what works for me.
It's good.
Does that help you? I don't know if insulate is the right word, but I was looking at the plot description of Beautiful Boy, which I don't think anybody has screened yet. But yeah. As a parent, I mean, that's the nightmare. That's what keeps you up at night. And so the idea of getting into the skin of somebody who's living that scares the bejiggers out of me. But as an actor, that seems to be the sort of challenge that you go for. Can you separate how Maria would deal with this situation versus the character, or do you wind up having to go home and do a lot of hugging?
I can never separate myself. I mean, I don't feel like I take my character home per se, but I feel like with every character I play, there's certainly, it's a piece of me, you know? So my reaction can't be anything, if it's going to be authentic and truthful, can't be just an idea of something. It has to be something that really comes from myself. And it's a beautiful film, Beautiful Boy. I just finished it with Michael Sheen, about a Columbine-type shooting and the parents of a kid. And it was really pretty devastating, but it made me fall in love with acting again for the first time in a couple of years. So it was a good experience.
How so?
Who directed?
Sean Q, this young guy, first-time director, but it was such a beautiful script. And so we signed on to do it. We did in L.A. in 3 weeks. Just because emotionally it was just incredible and beautifully written and beautifully shot. So
who's shooter?
Another young kid, David something or other. I mean, he's only done student films, but
smart,
they did it mostly on handheld. And at one point, we did an 11-page one shot. So it was like doing a play.
Wow.
It's
like
really
Woody.
Fun. Really fun.
So Maria, I have to ask you. Spirit Awards are coming up. You've got your nomination for Downloading Nancy.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the nom and the awards? And
well, I have to say we were very shocked because no one saw the movie. You know, it's a really provocative movie for you guys who have seen it. And it came out 2 years ago, I feel like. So it was quite surprising, but I'm thrilled about it. It's really, really means a lot to me because we really put our heart and soul into that movie, and I think it's something that should be seen.
Are either of you getting ready to start filming anything in the near future?
Yep.
What are you doing?
Something with you, aren't I?
Oh, I was like, really? What are we doing? Okay.
I'm going to work with Isabella Rossellini in a little film in London called Late Bloomers.
Ooh, yeah. She's hot.
She is still hot.
She's really hot. I always had a crush on her. She was like my main crush.
You're not supposed to have a crush on her.
I can.
Yeah. And then I'm going to go to Australia, and I'm going to do a play in Cate Blanchett's husband, Andrew Upton, and she run a theater in Sydney, and I'm going to do Long Day's Journey tonight with them. We're going to rehearse for 6 weeks, and we're going to perform for 6 weeks, and we're going to bring the production back to Portland, Oregon for a month. As an exchange program, I'm going to teach, and I'm going to be a repertory ensemble actor, and may play a small role in another American classic, and I'll play a large role in that play, and I'm going to be an actor. You know what I mean? Hey. What's that?
A real actor.
The real actor.
Is Cate going to be in Long Day's Journey?
No.
Who's going to be the creator of
the cast are well-known Australian actors right now. I don't know them offhand.
Marie, we don't get to see you do flat-out comedies that often, but an Adam Sandler film has got to be a change for you.
I'm so excited about this movie. I never got to do a big comedy, but I know Adam and he saw me in this role, so it's with Adam and Kevin James and Chris Rock and all the guys from Saturday Night Live, and it was a blast to do. It was a lot of improv and a real character that I played, and we had a blast doing it. It'll be interesting to see.
And who is your character? What kind of?
I play Kevin James's wife, and it's about all these kids that were friends in high school, and Kevin and I never left our hometown. I'm an obsessive mother and obsessive about Star Magazine. And still breastfeed my kid at 5 years old, and it's years later we meet up at a lake house and hilarity ensues.
Who's
directing
that?
Forgive me.
Was it
Dennis Dugan.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Too short.
No, Nepalese.
Did you all talk?